For our reading this morning, I wanted to share two excerpts from the writing of James Baldwin. How many people have heard of James Baldwin, American writer? I was surprised. Sometimes his books and essays are required reading in high school, and sometimes they're not, so I find a lot of folks who haven't heard of him. And I wanted to give you a sense of what some of his writing was like and some of the topics he cared deeply about. So this first excerpt comes from an essay called Autobiographical Notes. I don't like people who like me because I'm black. Neither do I like people who find in the same accident grounds for contempt. I love America more than any other country in the world, and exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually. I think all theories are suspect, that the finest principles may have to be modified or even be pulverized by the demands of life, and that one must find one's own moral center and move through the world hoping that this center guides one aright. The second excerpt is from a well-known essay, The Fire Next Time. Perhaps the whole root of our trouble, the human trouble, is that we will sacrifice all the beauty of our lives and imprison ourselves in totems, taboos, crosses, blood sacrifices, steeples, mosques, races, armies, flags, nations, in order to deny the fact of death, the only fact we have. It seems to me that one ought to rejoice in the face of death, ought to decide indeed to earn one's death by confronting with passion the conundrum of life. So as we talked about with the children, tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day. And we are also starting the year, 2015, that is the 50th anniversary of the Selma to Montgomery March for Voting Rights. And Unitarian Universalists will be celebrating that around the country. A bunch of us are even going down to Selma in March for the anniversary. So I'll be talking more about that in March. We'll be talking about this more, but part of Dr. King's legacy was to fight for the full humanity of every human being, to make sure that it was recognized in detail. Today we're going to hear about one of Dr. King's contemporaries, James Baldwin. Baldwin thought his writing and his activism, he used them to help us take off the masks society teaches us to wear. Masks that keep us from connecting with one another. Baldwin and Dr. King shared the message of wanting us all to be in community, to be more aware of our shared humanity. The message that that has to be recognized to live an ethical life. And I want to tell you briefly a story about a time when I was reminded of how dangerous it can be to fit people into the social categories, the labels, the assumptions that we have ready-made in our minds whenever we look at another person. So a few years ago, when I was visiting my small town in South Carolina that I grew up in, my dad and I went to a coffee shop to spend some time together and chat. And I saw two white men walk in wearing camouflage jackets, and one had a hat on that said something about the NRA. And I thought to myself, oh, I know these people. Closed-minded, small, southern men. I know what these people are like. So we're sitting there, and I start to overhear part of their conversation. And I realized this was a few years ago. They had just been to see Les Mis, the three-hour musical about the French Revolution, or one of them. And they were analyzing what songs they liked best and why, and, you know, did it fit with the true historical things that had happened that time. And one said to the other, "Shoot, boy, I'd love to see it again." And I smiled, and I had to reprimand myself, because of course I didn't know these people just by looking at them or hearing the cadence of their speech. Social categories, labels, it's how we make sense of the world around us, the society we live in. Knowing our identity, who we are, where we feel at home, is important. The groups we belong to can even make us feel empowered, safe, loved. But we also know that labels cloud our ability to see the full humanity of others. And in losing sight of this, we are lost. James Baldwin wrote about these issues decades ago while living in Paris. Starting in the 1950s, Baldwin often spoke about the dangers of labeling human beings, the danger of losing the human being behind the label. Baldwin was born in August of 1924 into a cramped apartment in Harlem, New York City. He graduated from high school at a nasty time for racial relations in this country. As soon as he could, that's in part why Baldwin left for Paris, where he spent most of his adult life. He wanted to escape the nightmare he was living every day in hopes of gaining a new perspective of himself and the culture he was a part of. Baldwin was a writer, but he preferred the term artist. This means he wrote because he had to. As he said, "All artists are forced at last to tell the whole story." Writing was about bearing witness to the ethical and emotional failures he saw in American society, a society that seemed based on the dehumanization of people of color. And he said he would be as persistent as rain and snow and taxes in getting his message across. At the same time, Baldwin resisted and greatly resented being labeled himself. When magazines and newspapers celebrated him as a protest writer, he denied that he was. Instead, he warned about ideologies and social movements, authoritative religion, and race identity. He wanted to speak out about injustice without losing the intimate details of human life. We are in trouble when labels become more important than human beings. In Baldwin's words, "Complexity is our only safety, and love is the only key to our maturity." Baldwin was captivated by the leaders of the civil rights movements, especially Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. But he cared more about what intimate spiritual knowledge Dr. King relied on in his private moments. He cared more about that than he did the public figure, Dr. King, leader of the civil rights movement. Who was he really? Baldwin wanted to know. He wrote once, "When I say I want to know of Dr. King's private life, I am not referring to those juicy tidbits, those meaningless details which clutter up the gossip columns and muddy everybody's mind and obliterate the humanity of the subject as well as that of the reader. I wanted to ask how it felt to be standing where Martin stood, how he bore it, what complex of miracles had prepared him for it." Critics, reporters, fellow writers, and friends constantly came up with labels to confine Baldwin. The prophet Elijah Muhammad requested an audience with Baldwin, hoping to recruit him to the Nation of Islam. But after their conversation, Baldwin denounced the Nation of Islam for its rhetoric about whites. He said, this is dehumanizing. I won't be a part of it. He compared their tactics and rhetoric to that of the Ku Klux Klan in a widely read essay we heard an excerpt from, The Fire Next Time. He criticized fellow African-American writer Richard Wright, saying that Wright had trapped black experience in suffering and despair rather than producing fully formed human characters who could teach readers about the humanity of black men and women. Baldwin wrote that by all logic, given his place in society, he should hate whites. But he said, due to mysteries of temperament, luck, and my sense that hatred is always in the end self-hatred, I cannot. At the same time, Baldwin was also labeled as an angry black man by whites. His intensity made liberals like Bobby Kennedy and the writer William Faulkner uncomfortable. They both insisted, the time is not right, relax, wait to seek racial equality. But Baldwin responded that the boiling point had been reached. There is never a time in the future in which we will work out our salvation, he said. The challenge is in the moment, the time is always now. Some labeled Baldwin as a gay writer. Baldwin was openly gay for most of his careers. Writing, he published a novel in 1956 called Giovanni's Room about a gay love affair. 1956, and it was widely published. That amazes me. But he refused the label because he said the word gay couldn't sum him up or describe the depth and complexity of the love affairs he had with people who happened to be men. Baldwin was not a gay writer, not a black writer, he kept insisting. He was a human writer. On a lecture tour of American universities around the country, he would constantly say to predominantly white audiences, I'm only black if you're white. Oh. Baldwin mourned people's reluctance to be vulnerable to one another. Being aloof, playing it safe in human relationships should never be the goal. Love is about risk. You slowly remove the mask society has taught you to wear, and you stand naked in front of another human being. And if you get hurt, it won't be a radical white feminist who gets hurt. It won't be a gay man or socialist. It will be you, your inner life, your hope and longing exposed. And yet it is at this moment of vulnerability and bareness that we can speak at last as friends and fellow human beings. If we strip away what we believe to be true about one another based on the appearance or the cadence of their speech, we cannot understand what experiences and emotions made someone who they are unless we agree to be vulnerable to ourselves and to each other. Baldwin suggests a straightforward cure for any injustice. If you really love one person, you will love all people, he said. He believed that if you could be tenderly and electrically aware of the moments when our inner lives connect with the inner lives of another, stigmas, racism, sexism, homophobia would disappear. It isn't easy, because we have to be willing to see the ugliness, doubt, and suspicion inside ourselves. Baldwin calls us to believe in uninhibited, risky, dangerous, and all-consuming love. Love for an individual can teach us all we need to know about love for the world. As a teenager, Baldwin spent a few weeks among the Pentecostal church in Harlem as a young preacher at 14. And he later wrote that his conversion to a preaching career was a gimmick that subconsciously saved him from himself. It was not until Baldwin fell in love with an Italian man on his block that he discovered what would save him, acknowledging his full humanity and the full humanity of others. Baldwin's religion could not be about avoiding the self or this world or this life. What can we as a sacred community, as individual seekers of truth, learn from the wisdom of Baldwin? What labels do we put on ourselves and others? What labels have people given you that restrict you? Maybe you are a lesbian, but want to be known for more than your sexuality alone. Maybe you're a white man, but don't feel that anyone could know you simply by knowing that. We are entrenched in assumptions about one another. Many of these assumptions are given to us by our families, society, church. Our assumptions may be so quiet a whisper that we forget sometimes that a fleeting thought about two men in a coffee shop can rob them of their full humanity. Church should be a space in which we feel fully human. Church buildings should be the home of people who are learning to be vulnerable to one another, open to learning something more about each other. Even here, where sometimes we assume we are so similar on political thoughts or theological ideas that we think we know the person sitting next to us on Sunday, when we're just beginning to. We are taught that we can know someone by the color of their skin, the religion they follow, the gender they choose to perform. Social categories, labels, are how we make sense of the world around us and the society we live in. Knowing our identity, who we are, can help us feel safe and empowered. But the task Baldwin calls us to is to seek out ways of honoring the full humanity of everyone we meet. We have been reminded again in these past few days that labeling one another, dividing ourselves by our differences and staying separate, leads to fear and violence. This week, let us continue the work of opening our hearts, Baldwin's wisdom ringing in our ears. May we honor the full humanity of everyone we meet. Blessed be. Amen.